And we're really constantly having those conversations. And so it feels like digital citizenship itself kind of gets pushed even further to the wayside accidentally because we're trying to prioritize student learning. And then when we do that, we see spikes in behaviors associated with it. So taking the time up front and making sure that remains a priority, because when we talk about general student safety, safety online is part of that. And student safety is really has to be our first and primary focus as an education institution. So we need to make sure that we are capitalizing on those opportunities to teach them the online safety.
You're listening to the SmartSocial.com podcast. I'm your host, Josh Oakes. This is our District Talk segment where we interview district leaders to learn how they're keeping students safe on social media so those students can someday shine online. Now, let's get back to the interview.
Joseph Jones, Superintendent of Newcastle County Vocational Technical School District. We're roughly about 4,800 students. We are a vocational technical, so only high school, only career and technical education. And we are located in Newcastle County, Delaware, and we cover the entire county.
Hi, my name is Ben Schuldiner. I'm the superintendent of the Lansing School District here in the glorious capital of Michigan. We have about 10,000 students across 26 schools, and it's a wonderful school district.
My name is Ashley Smith. I'm the executive director of 21st Century Learning for Lucia Marr Unified School District, which is located in the Pismo Beach area, so the central coast of California. We have 19 schools and about 10,000 students.
How has your school district been successful in increasing parent engagement to help keep students safe on social media?
So increasing parent engagement so they're aware to really help their students. This is really difficult. We started, and this more was born out of COVID. And unfortunately, I was a fairly new superintendent when COVID hit. And we know students were at home more. They were on their devices a lot more. We started doing live night show nights with our parents. So some were very informational around curriculum, but others were on mental health, what students were doing, how much screen time they were on. And so we tried to alert them in that way through just us coming on some platform, whether Teams, Zoom, you know, some type of platform our parents could log in. That in the beginning of COVID was excellently attended. Throughout COVID, it dropped off, meeting after meeting after meeting, you know, less and less participation. That's one way we did it throughout COVID. The other way we try now is all of our new freshmen, being a high school only district and covering the entire county, we're very sensitive to the diverse population coming to us, but not in the diversity a lot of people think of in terms of like gender or race or ethnicity. Diversity from different school systems that had different behaviors, different allowances. So we became pretty attuned to that, and we have a couple freshman orientations. So our incoming freshman class, we meet with them, we talk to them, and that's one of the topics like we would cover is just being socially aware, understanding, you know, that there are incognito browsers, that they can have multiple usernames, you know, not what they're showing you is on the surface. So we've tried those type of things. And then when we come back to school in the fall, you know, we have some additional parent nights. And this is something we often talk about. But it also goes back to just that relationship. We need students willing to come to us and talk about things, monitor their behaviors, important and so forth. But if they want to get into harmful things, whether on a device or not, they can. And so us just admitting that fact as a school community and recognizing that schools are microcosms of the greater community, we have to be partners in this. So we try to partner with outside agencies that may connect with our students and build relationships. Those agencies may also communicate with parents, but also just trying to inform our parents and keeping that two-way street open. So if they see something or we see something, we can have a dialogue, just knowing that at a push of a button, students can get into very difficult situations.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how great we've been. We've certainly tried. We have these PCAC meetings, which are basically parent meetings throughout the district. We talk a lot about safety on the internet, online. We certainly advocate parents to, know their kids' social media. One of the things that we're really proud of course, that I would, every school district needs to have, is if you're on our Wi-Fi system, we have keystroke access. And so when you're searching for, something like, sadly, how to hurt somebody or how to blow up a school, we can immediately go to that kid and say, hey, what's going on? A funny side note is a kid typed in what is an IED? And that's an improvised explosion device. That's what they use to blow up things in Iraq and the Middle East. Well, so we immediately are like, oh my God. And we get to the kid and it's a little one in the elementary schools. And we're just like, what's going on? And she's like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. I meant IUD. And we're like, why would you want IUD? You're in second grade, And she's like, no, my sister asked me, she didn't want to get in trouble. And so just by having that technology, we were able to immediately go to that kid in their classroom because we knew exactly where they were, have a conversation, talk to the parents, then talk to the older sister that this was all about anyway. And so it can be a good, and now you get counseling for kids and you get support for kids. So there's a lot that we're doing and we're showing parents that we have that as well, where we have a parent university where we help create classes for parents. And a lot of that is about social media and it's a lot about how to navigate that. So, For social media and just technology in general, for it to be a good, you need all of the actors to not only be on the same page, but to want to really see it as a good. So you do, training software help with kids, you do it with the parents, and you also have to do it with staff too. Not every staff member feels comfortable using technology. If you've been teaching for a while and you're good, you kind of want to keep doing what you're doing. But, we try to spend as much time as we can giving professional development for, all members of our community.
I think Smart Social has really helped us, and we've pushed that out a lot of times to our parents. And the more we do it, we get a few more signups each time. We've also had at a lot of our schools, even at the elementary level, start embedding opportunities like within back to school night or open house to have myself or someone else available kind of in a room to come in, ask questions, give a little bit more background on something that they might be struggling with or present some resources available to them at entry points when they're already coming to the campus. So they don't have to come just for that kind of aspect.
Are there any stories that come to mind about any social media incidents you've been able to get in front of or avoid by being proactive?
I will say one thing we are able to do is students can drop videos, drop messages, airdrop literally through their phones in halls. I think having student advisors very savvy to that, our advisors are able to prevent a lot from happening because they're keenly aware of some of the negative behaviors associated with technology. So even before posts can go viral, especially if it's against like one student, I know of a few situations even this year we've been able to get out in front just because they'll walk around and they can pick up if someone's trying to drop something and the students know that's not permitted. So they're not just idly standing in the hallway watching kids. They're literally also looking at devices, finding if students are doing things that they shouldn't be doing, and tracking behavior that way, which is excellent. So that's one example I would say that's worked out well. But again, I try to be as forthright and as transparent as possible. It's hard. I mean, all of this is very hard work. And at any moment, any student, parent, community member can post anything they want, true or not true. So I think just, again, harping on it, those relationships are critical.
Oh, sure. I mean, all the time, so there is a issue, a couple of months ago where, you know, a parent was very irate and was using social media to kind of like drum up these, you know, kind of sense of vitriol against a certain school. And, you know, because we were connected to that parent, we immediately knew what was going on. We had people in the community that knew that parent, and we were able to then just leverage those relationships and talk to that parent way before, have that parent actually take down the stuff from social media, get the parent and the child the help that they needed in a matter of a day. And so those are the kinds of relationships that you need to happen. Of course, would we rather them just email the principal? Of course we would. But, you know, sometimes they try and sometimes the principal doesn't respond or whatever. There's tension there. And so as long as you're kind of checking that social media and you see what's going on, you know, and you respond quickly, that's really helpful. And the parent was actually pretty surprised that we kind of jumped on it and tried to deal with it as quickly as we could. And they were happy, and they ended up taking it down, and we were able to kind of do right by the kid and right by the family. There's a lot of stories like that, but again, it's about being connected to your families so that when they do post something or you do see something, you can act very, very quickly. And not in a, hey, you have to take it down, how could you possibly say that? It's, hey, we hear you. Let's have a conversation offline so that people don't misinterpret what you're saying or misunderstand what you're saying, because we know the story, but then a lot of times people will add to it. And I mean, you know how crazy social media can get. You know, people are just adding stuff left and right, and they don't even know what's going on. Like, you know, a comment from California about something that's happening in Michigan, you don't even know, right? But if you can work with your families and your kids, that you see that stuff, you act immediately, and you can address it, you know, it ends up being really helpful, because whoever's putting that online, it's an ask for help, regardless of if it's being done in a negative or positive way. So if you can address it and try to get that person that help, it actually works out pretty well.
What would your advice be to educators and administrators to work together to create a culture of digital safety and responsibility in their schools?
So creating a culture of digital safety, digital responsibility, having everyone at the table as a part of this. I think it begins with people thinking policy and procedures. ChatGPT is probably the best example right now. And I've read about some schools that are like trying to ban ChatGPT. Students are cheating. That is a losing battle. You are not, and some obviously are going to disagree with me, but technology is something we can embrace. ChatGPT, we have to think about that even as adults, that how can we use that technology to help us? You know, I was fortunate enough to listen to Adam Chire recently, who is a founder of Siri. And this is one of the things he really discussed is, you know, schools, school leaders, educators, understanding the potential behind this technology, understanding that there's a lot that can be done well with it. And so I think for us, it's even connecting with students first, starting discussions before coming to conclusions. Because I think what happens is we want to control it. And I get that. But command and control style leadership fails. It fails ultimately. And even with students, it fails. So having very open conversations with students about, okay, how can we use this technology? Even rethinking papers that use ChatGPT in like English class, but the students have to cite the source. You know, so there are ways that you can start to use it. And there's people out there that are way ahead of this. There's a UPenn professor that is discussing this right now. So there are unique things, because when it comes to digital citizenship, you know, we now know that some of these platforms are the largest countries in the world, whether we think about it that way or not. So it's powerful for us as a school district. It's powerful to be able to get a message out. As we're recording this, it's Paraprofessional Day. It's also Assistant Principal Week. That is also digital citizenship. I'm taking responsibility, you know, to recognize the good things that come with it. Then you can start crafting policies and procedures to protect everyone. What is allowed, what isn't allowed. But you got to start from a place, I think, first of fully understanding the technology, how it can benefit you as a school, a school district, and then going into the idea of, okay, well, how could it not benefit? What are our downfalls? And then start working from that and then looking at other resources to help guide those decisions.
So, you know, I think the first thing is you always want to have kind of codes of conduct, because what's worse is when you say, oh, you can't do that. And they go, well, you never told me. Like, what are you talking about? So, you know, you first want to really figure out what are the rules of the road? What do you believe about technology? Because a lot of times you're going to get some pushback about like, oh, I never want kids to have cell phones in your class. Okay, fine. That might make sense if you have laptops at the ready and you have strong Wi-Fi, whatever. But, you know, this phone, which is like an 11 and basically broken, has more, you know, memory and capacity than all the computers put together in the world from like, you know, 2001. So, or probably 1992. But like the idea that that's a tool, again, like the knife, it could either be used to do good or used to be bad. And so what you got to say, and what I mean, who am I to tell any educator what to do? But like the idea here is you can see it as a good, but you've got to create the rules of the road. And you also don't be afraid of the technology. If you have good classroom management and a kid has a cell phone in their pocket and you say, hey, take out the cell phone and Google this, or take out your cell phone and look at this, or, oh, wow, it's probably got a better software than whatever calculator the kid has in front of them. You know, so there's ways to do that. You know, and I would also then go in with an open mind. You know, don't always see something as negative or that you have to stop it. Don't have deficit thinking. Try to see these things as additive and helpful. But then the other side, of course, is like I've been saying, you got to have those relationships. You've got to know when something's not going on. That's why I greet those kids in the front of the school. Say hi, take a look, you know, have somebody that is checking social media, seeing if there's action, and then you can address that accordingly.
It's so important. I know personally and the district right now, we've been doing a lot of work with, you know, priority standards and re-energizing people after COVID and coming back. And the argument is always like, there's so many things and they're so behind and we've got to, you know, teach third grade work in fourth grade because they missed that year. And we're really constantly having those conversations. And so it feels like digital citizenship itself kind of gets pushed even further to the wayside accidentally because we're trying to prioritize student learning. And then when we do that, we see spikes in behavior associated with it. So taking the time up front and making sure that remains a priority, because when we talk about general student safety, safety online is part of that. And student safety is really has to be our first and primary focus as an education institution. So we need to make sure that we are capitalizing on those opportunities to teach them the online safety.
What are your one to two biggest social media concerns for the future?
Our one or two biggest social media concerns in the future. I think for us, that's a hard question to answer. Mainly, when I think about concerns, I think about challenges, problems. And I may look at technology and all of this slightly different. I would say that we just can't keep up with it. I don't get overly concerned with it being used in a bad way, per se. But when I think about technology and how it's transformed industry and having a school district that is supposed to really be focused on workforce development, how can we harness the power of that technology in our school so our students are ready on another level? That's what concerns me the most, that we're going to be archaic because our students are still learning in ways that are just old. And I don't mean the typical traditional instructional strategies, but there is, you know, this idea of having, you know, just digital knowledge. And we have to start thinking about that from a curriculum standpoint. Like, what should our students know? Almost just like a world language through certain technologies. And I think that's going to be critical for us of building this workforce, having our students ready and having them engaged. And so I don't look at it from a negative. It's more this whole notion, can we keep up with it? And can we prepare students, you know, to actually be able to use this technology? Because, you know, it's a vast, vast world. And I will give one small note to that, because I think when we think about technology, we start thinking about devices. We just wrote an innovation grant. So one of our schools who has auto tech, we are putting in electric charging stations. And as states are moving to EV laws and having that type of policy where so many cars have to be electric cars, that is what I'm referring to. How do we have the technology in our schools? Now, we were fortunate enough, we got the grant, they're being installed, and our students will learn that technology. But we have auto tech programs at all four schools. This is only at one right now, but it's expensive. So how do we scale it? How do we get that technology in the classrooms? And how do we start thinking just very broadly that, look, this is a great thing. How do we keep up with it?
Oh, is that, you know, basically the capitalist market of America only cares about making money and protecting these companies when we actually should be suing the pants off of all of them because they have been derelict in trying to protect children. I mean, it is an absolute travesty that you can post threatening, horrible things on, you know, Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and it takes weeks, if not months, for the companies to even respond. You know, they have to be held accountable. You know, if a newspaper printed something like that, they would all go to jail. And the argument of, hey, we're just a platform, just rings very hollow. And so I think what we need to make sure of as educators is to really hold people's feet to the fire, to say, you've got to do a better job. Even just let us control something, right? You know, yeah, free speech. But when a 14-year-old uses your platform to try to hurt somebody else, that's not protected. What that is something that we're going to have to deal with. I wish some Facebook executives would have to spend 5 minutes being a superintendent, dealing with the kind of stuff that we have to deal with. They would understand pretty quickly how much more they need to do to protect the children and to protect the schools.
I think, you know, for me in this role and watching kids do things positively and seeing some negative things come out of it, just seeing the constant use of social media, I think, is our biggest concern. And kids' ability to stay present. One of our continuation high schools uses a device called Yonder, where they check their phones in and out basically each day. And that's a different, smaller school, different setting. It's the only one of our schools that does that right now. But the level of student engagement when they're not worried about having their phone or missing a call or, you know, missing a tweet or whatever it is, really changes. And so as kids get more and more connected to social media, I would worry about their ability to detach from it and be present in whatever it is that they're trying to learn at that moment.
Funding is tough. What advice would you give to other districts to secure funding to create resources that parents need?
So funding is incredibly difficult. I think most of us have a ton of ESSER funds that we've spent, although that's coming with challenges. You know, and so there are always opportunities out there. States have worked hard. I will say our state in the great state of Delaware, you know, our governor and others have legislators have worked hard to recognize the changing demographics in our state. And so they've awarded something called opportunity funds for some students. But all of that is orchestrated through different channels that we don't always have control of. We are starting to get more in the grant writing business. Now, we're a smaller district, just under 5,000 students. So we don't have an army of individuals who can write this. But I will say for career and tech ed, things like Perkins funds, 509 funds, we've seen less of those funds in our district over the years. In fact, in some cases, we were actually receiving more money around 2010 than we were in 2023. So for us, like that innovation grant that I spoke of, what's available nationally or statewide that school districts can be savvy to and start getting in tune with some of these funds? because outside of that, I don't see it changing in other ways. You know, we can always pour more money into education. However, it's not always allocated the way you want it to. So I think just understanding all of the ways in which you can receive funding, and there are outside organizations that can help with that. We just were fortunate enough to be at National School Boards. I attended a session specifically on making us more aware of national grants available, because we're thinking along those same lines. How can we keep up with the technology? How can we pour more resources into the school, whether it's for mental health, whether it's for technology, whether it's for curriculum? You know, how can we tap into these other sources that isn't in a way that's going to also crush us because we're a small district? We need to have accessibility, and that accessibility has to be convenient as well.
Try to go for every grant dollar you can. Try to be as friendly as you can to your government, regardless of their politics, because they got the money. Try to make friends with some large foundations. But also, you know, that's adding to the pie. In some respects, you also have to be more efficient with the money we already have. I think certainly with COVID, it was like Brewster's Millions. You know, you just had all this money and you started to spend, and you got to make sure that you're spending it effectively and efficiently, and that when the funding stops, you don't fall off the, you know, the edge. Take a look at all the technology contracts you have. You might not need all of them. You know, some of them might be super redundant. And just because, like, you had somebody who was like, oh, buy the software 3 years ago, see if anybody uses it, right? I mean, there's this story, I think it was out of Texas, where the state just hired a company to do something. And the way that they wrote the grant was that if they had from 0 to 1,000 users or 0 to 10,000 users, well, they had 0 users and they were still paying millions of dollars to the software company. That's ridiculous, right? You know, you want to really make sure that the money that you are spending is being spent efficiently, and look at ways to kind of increase the revenue, increase the pots. And like the last thing I'll say is success breeds success. You know, the more that you can do something and show that you're doing something good, a lot of people want to be part of that story. And then it's easier to raise money that way.
Funding is tough. And like in California, we've been lucky to receive a lot of one-time funding sources recently, so we could do some large purchases. But that is not sustainable. So when you get the chance for some sustainable funding, so you can keep the movement going, you need to look ahead. So if you're going to start something big and it has these one-time startup costs, one-time money is a great source. But making sure that you have the sustainability built behind it, otherwise a one-and-done initiative isn't something that is going to move the district in a positive direction.
Thanks for listening to our SmartSocial.com podcast. I'm your host, Josh Oakes. This was our District Talk segment, where we interview school district leaders to learn how they're keeping students safe on social media so those students can someday launch into their future by shining online. This episode was brought to you by our SmartSocial.com VIP program. It's called the Very Informed Parent Program, which helps you engage your students with teen-led video lessons, stay one step ahead with our premium parent newsletter, and discover hidden features on trending apps on teens' phones and our 54-plus live parent and student-friendly events every single year. You can click on the link below to chat with one of our team members if you want a free pass to our VIP program to support your community with our SmartSocial.com resources. And if you're a district leader who has a success story, we would love to feature you on a future episode. You can click the links below to reach out. Thanks so much for listening, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Have a great day.